All right, Tavosa, good morning. So today's daf is Pei Gimel. We are picking up on the last two words of Pei Beis Amud Beis. Amar Rav. Rav says, top of Pei Gimel. Lesa lamas nisin mikamei braisa. This Mishnah that we quoted is essentially rendered irrelevant in the face of another conflicting braisa. And I remember again what we are specifically referring to over here is the position of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi said in the Mishnah that androgynous ma'achil as ishto betruma, that if a Kohen androgynous marries a woman, that he entitles her to go ahead and allow his wife, he entitles his wife to eat truma, which is not in the way of saying what? That an androgynous is a vadai zohar, that androgynous is male. So now comes along Rav and says, we have a conflicting braisa. What does the braisa say? Disanya, Rabbi Yossi says, androgynous beria bifne atzmuhu. The androgynous is an entity unto itself. Meaning that again, it's not male, it's not female, it's an entity unto itself. And the rabbis never decisively or conclusively ruled if the androgynous is a zachar or an akeva. We'll say our shir today. See, I looked at the sheet and I didn't even. Our shir today is sponsored by Melanie and Milt Gertner in memory of Melanie's mother, Fanny, from a Bas Yitzchok Michal. And your Milt's mother, I'm sorry, from Abbas Yitzchok Michal. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah that Milt's mother's neshama has an aliyah. Shikoyach. So therefore I will say, in this braisa, Rabbi Yossi says that the androgynous is a beria bifne atzmo, is an entity unto itself. It's not male, it's not female, it's another category. And the rabbis were unable to decide, they never conclusively decided if it's male or female. And I will say, in a situation like that, what essentially that means is they gave it stringencies of both male and female. So the Rosh says, therefore again, Rav comes along and says, the Braisa goes ahead and essentially contradicts the Mishnah, and therefore the Braisa negates the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Adrabo, lest the Braisa become as Nisan. Why do you say that the Braisa goes ahead and essentially usurps the Mishnah? Why don't you say that the Mishnah goes ahead and usurps the Braisa? Right? In the Mishnah, again, Rabbi Yossi, so we'll say, understand, we have two conflicting statements. In the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi said that the androgynous is like a vadai zachar, is like a male. And in the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi saying that lemaisa, we don't know if the androgynous is a zachar in the keva. So Rav comes along and says that, the Braisa trumps the Mishnah, to which the Gemara says, well, how do you know if the Mishnah doesn't trump the Braisa? To which the Gemara says, "Mideshavki Rabbi Yossi the Bar Zugay," since Rabbi Yossi left his partner. Now, what is that referring to? In the Mishnah, the Mishnah quotes Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon as both indicating that an androgynous has the status of a zachar, and yet in the Braisa, it's just Rabbi Yossi by himself. So the fact that Rabbi Yossi, quote-unquote, left his partner, the fact that Rabbi Yossi, again, now went away from Rabbi Shimon, and is quoted by himself, indicates that Rabbi Yossi changed his position. Shmamina Hadrebe, therefore see from here that he retracted his original position in the Mishnah, that an androgynous is like a zohar, and instead subscribes to the view as espoused in the Braisa, that androgynous, we're just simply not sure about what the status is. So the Gemara goes weiter. Omer, so I'm sorry, fine. Shmuel disagrees with Rav, and Shmuel says, Lesa lebraisa mikamei mas nisin. Shmuel comes along and says, no, I think that the Mishnah goes ahead and overrides the Braisa. To which the Gemara says, Adrab, so we'll say, therefore, according to Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi's position on the Mishnah, i.e., that an androgynous is a vadai zohar, goes ahead and upends his shita in the braisa that we're not sure about the status of an androgynous. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Adraba, lesa lemas nisin mekamei braisa. Why don't we go ahead and say that the Mishnah is set aside by Rabbi Yossi's position in the braisa? After all, daha shamina le Shmuel dechayish li yichido, because Shmuel is the one who says that Rabbi Yossi, when you have a das yachin, and normally the way you decide halacha is decided by the majority, right? So if let's say you have machlokis, one person says this, but the rabbim, the collective, says something else. So the maisa will go ahead and we will paskin like the collective. Shmuel is of the opinion that if you have a das yachid, if you have an individual opinion, and that individual opinion is more machmir than the collective, We will go like the individual opinion. So in this case over here, you have, again, Rabbi Yossi, who is a Das Yachid. He's an individual, but he's more Machmir. And Rabbi said, it's a Chumrah to say that we're not sure the status of an androgynous, if it's Zachar in the Keva, therefore we'll give it the Chumras of both. So therefore, again, Shmuel, who is Choshesh for a Das Yachid when it is Machmir, should hold like Rabbi Yossi as espoused in the Mishnah. To which the Gemara says, no. Hani mili kilo misakram as nisin. When is Shmuel Choshesh? When does Shmuel assume that Allah follows the Das Yachid individual opinion? That's only when that individual opinion does not uproot an established Mishnah. Avakimis Akram Asnisin. But if the individual opinion uproots an established Mishnah, Lo Chayish, then Shmuel will say we need not pay heed to that particular opinion. Okay, so I'll say, so still, we are left at the end of the day with the Machlokes, two different girsos, in Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah indicating that an androgynous is like a Zohar. Rabbi Yossi in the Braisa indicating that an androgynous is undecided. And apparently Machlokes, Rav and Shmuel, which one, the Mishnah or the Braisa, is ultimately the authentic source for Rashitas Rabbi Yossi. So let's go weiter. So the Gemara says the following. Amri Bey Rav. So they said the yeshiva of Rav. Amri Bey Rav, Mishmei de Rav. Halacha k'Rabbi Yossi ba'androgynous u'behar kava. So we'll say, now this is interesting. So they said in the yeshiva of Rav, in the name of Rav, that the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi in the case of androgynous and harkava. Harkava means grafting. We'll see exactly what that case means in just a moment. U'shmuel, Amr Shmuel said, b'koshi ubekidush. And in the case of koshi, which means bleeding, when a woman bleeds as a result of labor, ubekidush. Kidush Rabosai means when things become prohibited. We'll define all of these cases. Now the Gemara is suggesting again, so according to Rav, the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi in the case of androgynous and grafting, and Shmuel added in two additional cases. He said also follows Rabbi Yossi in the case of bleeding as a result of labor, koshi, and kiddush, and prohibition, which again we'll discuss in just a moment. So the Gemara says, androgynous hada amran. So androgynous, that's what we said before, namely, that the halacha is that an androgynous has the status of a zohar. That androgynous is considered to be male halachically, and therefore, again, if an androgynous were to be mekadesh nisha, if he were to go ahead and marry a woman, that marriage would be a valid marriage. If another man were to have relations with the androgynous, that would be homosexuality. We saw just the machlokes in terms of what type of relations would be considered homosexuality in such a situation like that. But nevertheless, it's aser. So that's number one. Next, harkava. What's the case of grafting? Disnan, because we learned in the Mishnah, ein notin, the ein mavrichin. So we'll say, you can't plant, again, we'll discuss when this is, you can't plant, the ein mavrichin. I will say, mavrichin is the process. They used to go ahead, and you would take a vine. So let's say you have a vine that's growing from the ground. So you would take the end of the vine that's not in the ground, and you'd plant it in the ground. It would then take root. After it would take root, you would snip it in the middle. Essentially, you're taking one vine and you're making it into two. That's called the process of mavrichin. Ve'in markivin. Markivin, Rabbi says, is the process of grafting. That's literally going ahead and, you know, taking one branch and inserting it into the trunk of another tree. Ein markivin. Erev shvius, on the eve of the Shemitah year, Pachos Mishloshim Yom Lifnei Rosh Hashanah. Less than 30 days before Hashanah. I will say, we actually saw this Gemara earlier on, that the restrictions of planting prior to Shemitah begin Rosh Chodesh Elul. Right, begin 30 days already prior to the Shemitah year. Therefore, the Mishnah says over here, you can't do any of these things. You can't, so you can't plant, you can't graft, and you can't go ahead and insert vines into the ground on the eve of the Shemitah year, less than 30 days before Rosh Hashanah. Ve'imnata, and if you did so, ve'imnata, ve'hivrich, ve'herkiv, and if you went and you did any of these things, you grafted, or hivrich, you went ahead and you inserted the vine into the ground, or herkiv, or you actually grafted, you planted, you inserted the vine, or you grafted, ya'akar. The halacha is you have to go ahead and uproot that which you planted. Look at Rashi, ya'akar, dekakalta b'shvi'is, de'ein harkava koletes b'hachos v'sholoshim. And the Rabbis say, again, remember, what's the idea of 30 days? 30 days is the amount of time that it takes for the object to go ahead and take root. So remember again, if you plant it less than 30 days, then the process of taking root will take place when? On the actual Shemitah year itself, which is Aser. Therefore, bless you. Therefore, if you go ahead and you do it prior to 30 days, that means, again, it'll take root. It'll take root prior to the Shemitah year, and that's not a problem. So if you planted it within 30 days, you actually have to uproot it, because otherwise, again, the object is going to take root on the Shemitah year itself. Dein Arkava Koletes, Bibachos Yishloshim Yom, says Rashi. Fine. Rabbi Huda says, Kol Harkava She'ino Koletes B'shloshe Yomim Shuv Eino Koletes. Rabbi Huda says, it's not true. Any harkava, any grafting that does not take within 3 days is not going to go ahead and actually take. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Shtei Shabbosos. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say, no, it's not 3 days, but rather again, it's 2 weeks. Va'omer Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman said, Omer Baravua, Ledivrei HaOmer Shloshim, Sarich Shloshim Ushloshim. Ledivrei haomer shlosha tzarech shlosha ushloshim. Ledivrei haomer shtei shabbosos tzarech shtei shabbosos ushloshim. So we'll say, listen to this. So this is very interesting. So the Gemara says over here like this. Now, what we're now indicating over here is the 30 days, there are two issues that are going on. We originally thought, according to the first opinion, that the issue of planting within 30 days is that Lamaise, it takes 30 days for an object to take root. Therefore, if you plant it within 30 days prior to Shemitah, it's going to end up taking root when? On Shemitah, during the Shemitah year, and that's going to be problematic. Therefore, you have to back it up. There's another issue. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Tzarech Shloshim V'Shloshim V'Shloshim. I'll define this in just a moment. So let's say the Gemara now says, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, go ahead and now come back and say the following. Excuse me, Rav Nachman is the one who comes back and says that Lemaisa, everybody agrees you need a 30-day buffer. But not only do you need a 30-day buffer, you also have to what? You also have to add on the amount of time that it takes for the plant to take root before that. So for example, if you hold that it takes 30 days for a plant to take root, then you have to what? You have to plant 60 days prior to Shemitah, right? The 30, again, for prior to Shemitah, and then the 30 days before that to go ahead and actually take root. If you hold it takes 2 weeks, you need to plant 2 weeks before the 30 days before Shemitah. So you hold it takes 3 days, so on. What's the pshat? Look at Rashi. Tzarech shloshim mishalosh, or shloshim ushloshim, excuse me. Kadesha tilklot shloshim lifnei shavias. You need the object to take root 30 days prior to Shemitah. Dichol shloshim lifnei shviyas kishviyas tamu. Because Rabbi say again, the 30 days prior to Shemitah already has a quasi Shemitah identity. Dinafkalon mi bacharish ubakatzar tishbos b'mashkin beis hashachan. Rabbi say we learn this in Moed Katan, that already again Chazal learn out midrabanan that already certain aspects of the Shemitah year apply already 30 days prior to Shemitah. As such, comes along Rav Nachman and says like this, that halacha lemaisa, it's not just enough to plant 30 days before Shemitah. Essentially, you have to treat the 30 days before Shemitah as if what? As if what? As if it's Shemitah. Which means that you have to back up any planting so that any planting takes root prior to the 30 days before Shemitah. So, interesting. So, Rav Nachman does not rule on the machlokis. Because remember, again, there's a three-way machlokis as to how long it takes items to take root. Rabbi Huda says 3 days. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say 2 weeks. And Rabbi Huda, right. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say 2 weeks. Good. Right. So Rav Nachman does not go ahead and paskin on that. Rav Nachman just says whatever you hold in terms of how long it takes to take root, understand you need to have that done prior to the 30 days before Shemitah. Fine. So the Gemara says, so that's case number two. Now in that case, over there, remember, Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that it takes an item 2 weeks to take root. So therefore, again, the Gemara is suggesting over here that the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi in this case as well. So the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi in terms of androgynous, that androgynous is like a male. The halacha follows Rabbi Yossi in terms of that it takes 2 weeks in order for a plant to take root, or a grafting to take root. Therefore, when planting prior to Shemitah, you have to plant 2 weeks and 30 days prior to the onset of Shemitah. What's the next case? The next case is a Shmuel Amar, Bekoshi V'Kiddush. So we'll say, remember, those are the three cases of Rav. Next, excuse me, the two cases of Rav, Androgynous and Harkava, and Shmuel added in two more cases that the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi, the case of Koshi and Kiddush. What are these cases? So the Gemara says, Shmuel Amar B'Koshi V'Kiddush, what's the case of Koshi? Disnan, Kama Yehei Kishuyeha. So we'll say, again, just a quick synopsis of this. So the halacha is that if a woman bleeds for three consecutive days at a time that she's not expecting her needle, so she's not expecting her period, so she becomes a Zava Gedola. That's a Zava Gedola. So Zava Gedola, remember, today the way we observe Hilchos Nida is a little bit different than what's mandated biblically. On a biblical level, again, a woman becomes a Nida. She bleeds for 7 days. Whether or not she actively bleeds for 7 days is irrelevant. And at the end of 7 days, she goes to the mikvah. That's the halacha of Nida, Midaraisa. What we have today is a little bit of a blended model of Nida and Zava Gidola. Because if a woman bleeds for three consecutive days during her non-Nida time of the month, then Lemaisa, and she has to observe 7 clean days as a result of being Zava Gidola. So we've kind of merged these two concepts today, because again, the ability to distinguish between what is a Nida flow versus what is a Zivus flow is not exactly easy to understand. So, therefore, at least 3 days, so the Maestro, she's a Zava Gidola. Now, there's one exception to this rule, which is that if a woman bleeds as a result of labor, so if a woman bleeds as a result of childbirth, even if she has 3 consecutive days of that type of bleeding, that does not render her a Zava Gidola. So the Shaila then is, how much before the birth can blood be attributed to labor blood? Right? How much before she actually gives birth could blood be considered to be labor blood versus, again, just stam, what we'll call Zava Gidola blood? So that's the Gemara is asking over here. Kama Yehei Kishu Yahu. How much before the birth? And I will say, obviously, in a situation like this, you only know after the fact, right? Because, again, obviously, you don't know when she's bleeding now, ultimately, again, when she's going to give birth. But after the fact, once she gives birth, you could look back and you could say, okay, now I see retroactively that bleeding was labor blood. What's wrong? I understand. I'm saying from the Gemara's perspective. From the Gemara's perspective, right, they were only able to tell after the fact. Right, today you could tell if a woman is in labor. I'm saying from the Gemara's perspective, they were only able to ascertain this after she gave birth. So the Gemara says the following. So how much before she gives birth can we attribute bleeding to labor blood? So Rabbi Meir says, "Oh, arba'im o chamishim yom." So Rabbi Meir says even 40 or 50 days before she goes out and gives birth. Rabbi Huda says, "Daya chadasha." Rabbi Huda says, "No, it's limited to bleeding of the 9th month." Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, "Ein kishu yoser mishtei shabasos." Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon say, "No, it's only bleeding for 2 weeks prior to delivery." So we'll say, so therefore, again, in this case over here, so Shmuel suggests the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, that the halacha is only bleeding prior to 2 weeks after giving birth is considered to be labor blood, and therefore would not make her a Zava Gidola. Okay, what's the next case? Kiddush. And I also remember, in this case, Kiddush does not mean sanctification. Kiddush means prohibition. So what's the case of prohibiting something? This time, let's listen to this case. Hamasachech gafno agabe tivuasa shel chavero. Listen to this. I really don't like my neighbor. So what do? He's growing wheat. I decide to take my vines, right, and drape them over his wheat, right, and create a kelayim situation, right, create a grafting situation. Remember, again, the paradigmatic biblical example of kelayim is wheat and vines. So I go ahead and I drape my vines over his wheat. So the halacha is that what? Kiddush, how is it kiddush? So I have literally rendered this mixture unfit. Rashi says, kiddush, lashon pentikdash, asar tevuas chavero. I have asered my friend's wheat as a result of kilayim. It was obviously, it's more complicated than just as we're making it over here. But for our purposes today, this is what we're going with. So again, I've made the wheat asar. V'chai bachrius d'remeir. But I will say, obviously, so I've ruined my friend's wheat. But what? I've damaged him. I'm obligated to pay. So I've ruined the wheat, but I'm chayiv to go ahead and pay the wheat for the wheat. Rabbi Yossi Bishimon say no. On the days, they say ein adam osher davar shinu shalom. They paskin a person cannot ask for something that is not theirs. The Akhtarbal say, again, you can't create kilayim with someone else's stuff. Kilayim can only be created if one person decides to graft his two hands. We see, by the way, this concept in a number of different situations. For example, the Gemara brings down, we'll see this in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara discusses this idea that what happens if I go ahead and I worship your animal? I say, your animal is my new deity. So can I answer your animal as Avodah Zarah? And I will say, so that's it. It's an interesting shayla. So it's being machlokes in the Gemara. So the way we pass it is that halacha lemaisa, no, you can't prohibit someone else's item. Now, obviously, there are times you can. If I go to your house and I pour milk into your chicken soup, so I'm going to go ahead and, I mean, you invited me. I made myself. You told me to make myself at home. Right? So obviously I could ask for that. But external things like making something kilayim or making something avodah zarah, we pass like Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon says Shmuel that you can't make someone else's item aser. Next, ibaylu. So we'll say now back to androgynous a little bit. Androgynous ma'ali amar Shmuel. So what would Shmuel paskin in the case of androgynous? Because we'll say now that we just quoted Shmuel before, and Shmuel said that the halacha essentially follows Rabbi Shimon in four different cases. So what does Shmuel say in the case of androgynous? So the Gemara says Tashma do amar Shmuel Ravanan lessa lebraisa mikamei masnisin. Shmuel already said. He said that the braisa is set aside in the face of the Mishnah. That's another way of saying what. Remember, what did Rabbi Yossi said in the braisa? That what? That we're not sure what the status of androgynous is. If it's zachar and a keva. What did Rabbi Yossi say in the Mishnah? That the halacha is that androgynous is a zachar. And Rabbi Shimon was of the opinion. Excuse me, and Shmuel said that the Braisa is set aside in the face of the Mishnah, i.e., that we pass like Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah, that an androgynous is a Zachar. So that's number one. Good. Next, Harkava Mali Amar Shmuel. What does Shmuel hold in the case of Harkava, in the case of grafting? Tashma da Amarli Shmuel Ravanan. Tani kaman da amar shlosha ushloshim. Shmuel paskin like the one who said that you require 33 days, right? 3 days for the item to take root. 3 days for the item to take root. And 30 days, of course, why? Because lemais, again, you can't plant anything within 30 days prior to Shemitah. Koshi mali amar Rav. What did Rav paskin in the case of Koshi? Because remember, I was saying again, Shmuel was the one who said that the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi in the case of Koshi. And what did Rabbi Yossi say in the case of Koshi? Rabbi Yossi said, "Ein kishri yoser mishtei shavasos." That it's only considered to be labor blood within 2 weeks prior to delivery. What did Rav say in the case of Koshi? To which the Gemara says, "Teku." We're not sure. Kiddush mali amarav. What did Rav say in the case of Kiddush? In the case of the kilayim, the grafting of the wheat and the vines, what did he say in that case? Remember, Shmuel paskind, like Rabbi Yossi, you said what? Ein adam oser davar she'enu shalo. A person cannot aser something that is not theirs. What did Rav say? Amarav Yosef tashma da amarav huna amarav. Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. Rav was of the opinion that the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yossi, i.e., that someone can aser something that is not there. It's quite interesting. Amar le Abaye, my chaz is the samchis aha, samach aha. Why is it that you rely on this statement? You should rely on the other statement. What's the other statement? Do amarav ad do amarav halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. Because Rav Ad is saying, Rav, the halacha is Rabbi Yossi. Amri Bey Rav Manu. So they asked, who is this Bey Rav? Rafuna. Bey Rav is Rafuna. For Rafuna Amar Ein Halacha. And Rafuna was of the opinion that in this case the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yossi. Okay. So the Gemara goes weiter. Look at Rashi Shmuel. Amri Bey Rav. The Amar Lael Halacha Rabbi Yossi Bandrogenis Ubar Kava. The Kami Bayli Alibayo Kiddushmai. Fine. So what I said at the end of the day, Rav would hold that the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yossi in the case of Kiddush. Fine. Rabbi Huda Omer Tumtum. So we'll say, remember again, in the Mishnah, the Mishnah said the following, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Tumtum Shenikra Venimtza Zachar. If you had a Tumtum, remember again, Tumtum is not the androgynous case. Tumtum is the sexual organs are covered over by some type of skin or some type of membrane. So let's say again, it's opened up, and it turns out that he's a Zachar, he's a male. Lo yachlots, he may not do chalitza, why? Bipnei shehu kisris. Because the assumption is that a tumtum, who is discovered to be a male, in reality is a sris. So because he's a sris, then again, there is no yibum or chalitza. Says the Gemara, listen to this, Amar Rabbi Ami. So both say, again, remember, aside from chalitza purposes, so this is important because the Maisa, what this tells us is that a tumtum whose membrane is opened up and it's discovered that he has male sexual organs, the Maisa will be considered to be like a sris. Now remember again, what type of sris will he be considered to be? A sris chama, very good, right? A sris numbers, which by definition tells you what can he do? He can marry. He can marry, right? Remember again, the prohibition of a sris, which essentially is a krushavcha or a ptsuadaka entering into Kal Hashem, is only sris adam. So lemaise again, the one ramification it does have is that he can't do even more chalitza because lemaise again, he can't father children. So because he can't father children, there's no din of yibum and chalitza. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says like this. Amar Rabbi Ami, listen to this. My avidli Rabbi Huda l'tumtum deberi. So what would Rabbi Huda do with the famous case of the tumtum of Beri? What happened with the tumtum of Beri? The osvuha abe kurse. So I will say, literally, they put him on the surgical chair. So they took this tumtum, they did a surgical procedure, and they opened up that skin, that membrane, v'ikra, and therefore again, it revealed the fact that he had male organs, v'olid sheva bnin, and he fathered seven children. He fathered seven children, which indicates to us what? That lamaisa, again, that a tumtum is not automatically a sris. So Rabbi Yehuda, what would he do with this? So what would Rabbi Yehuda say? Rabbi Yehuda, amrlei, chazar al bonov me'ayin heim. You better do a DNA test, right? That would be my suggestion. Because I'd be willing, if I was a betting man, I'd be willing to bet those are not his kids. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hudom, Rabbi Yehuda says, Tumtum lo yachlots, shema yikra v'nimtza srischama. So the Gemara goes on. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda said that a tumtum should not do chalitza because perhaps the membrane will be opened up. It'll turn out that he's a male and that he's a srischama. To which the Gemara says, one second. Atu called the mikra zachar havi. So we'll say, first of all, what's interesting about that statement is you make it sound like every time that a tumtum has the membrane opened up, that somehow he's a zachar. It's not true. A tumtum could be in a keva also. To which the Gemara says, Hachi kamer. This is what it means to say that a tumtum should not do chalitza. You know why? Shema yikra v'nimtza nekeva. Because it could be that what? That lemaisik, and maybe you'll open up the membrane and it'll turn out that what? That she's in a keva. It's a woman. And therefore, again, of course, if it's a woman, there's no din of chalitza. Va'afidu nimtza zachar. And even if it turns out that the tumtum is a male, shema yimtza sris chama. Maybe what? Maybe it'll turn, not maybe. If it turns out that it's a male, it's definitively a sris chama, in which case, again, there's no din of chalitza either. So my ben Ezra will say, so what is the nafkamina between these two opinions? So remember, again, essentially, we have two different ways of looking at the sris legabe chalitza purposes. So both agree that you shouldn't do chalitza. So one opinion says, because what? Because lemaisa, it's a zachar. We could assume it's a zachar, but it's a sris. The other opinion says, well, no, it's a safek, because it might be in a keva, but even if it's a zachar, it's going to be a sris. So what's the nafkamina between these two opinions? The Gemara says, my ika bein Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda, la'avuha. What is the distinction between these two opinions? Amar Rava, lifso b'makom achin, v'lachlot shalo b'makom achin ika me'as. So what's the look at Rashi? Rashi says, lifso b'makom achin, im yesh achin shleimim imo. Let's say again, this sris has other brothers who are normal, quote unquote. The chalat la tumtum, and what happened? And the tumtum is the one who did chalitza with the deceased brother's wife. The Rabbi Huda to amar shu kisris machzik le kisris vaday v'la pasla ala achin. So according to Rabbi Huda, who holds that the tumtum is a sris, therefore again the act of chalitza that the tumtum did is absolutely irrelevant, and the other brothers still have the ability to go out and do yibum. Ulu Rabbi Yossi, shema katoni, sveikahu uposta ala achim dimalav srisu v'chalitzi. But according to Rabbi Yossi, Abbasai, who holds that no, a tumtum is not a definitive sris, it's a possible sris. If he does chalitza, then what? That preclude the other brothers from doing anything. What's the next case? Rashi ulachlot shlob makamachim to do chalitza when there are no other brothers. Im ein sham ach elahu. Let's say a tumtum is the only surviving brother. Rabbi Huda lo baye chalitza. According to Rabbi Huda, there's no chalitza. Why? Because lemaisa, Rabbi Yehuda holds definitively that every tumtum is a sris, and if he is a sris, then lemaisa, there's no chalitza. On the other hand, but on the other hand, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, you would do chalitza misafek. Amar Shomar Yehuda, Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Abba Achud, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Zavdi, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Androgynous, chayavin alav skila mishtei makamos. So Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Rav, that an androgynous, again, going back to androgynous a little bit, see, androgynous has the status of a zocher, and therefore if you have relations with him, again, either way, either anally or vaginally, you are chayy for homosexuality in such a situation like that. Meisvei, Rabbi Eliezer Omar, androgynous chayovin alav skila kizachar. So what's say Rabbi Eliezer said that an androgynous, you're chayiv for relations with him, like a zachar, you're chayiv skila. B'medra amamurim, when is that true? This is machlokis we saw yesterday. B'medra amamurim, b'zachrus shalo. That's only true if you had relations with him from one male to another, i.e. shalo kedarka inali. Ava b'nakvus shalo potter. But if you had relations with him like a woman, because again, remember, he has both properties, then lemaisa again, you are potter. So the Gemara says, Hu da amar ki hai tana. He holds like this particular tana. The Sanya, Rabbi Simai, Omar Rabbi Simai says, androgynous chayovin alav skila mishtei makomos. Rabbi Simai said that an androgynous, you're chayiv for mishkav zachar, for homosexuality, if you have relations with him, either one of two ways. My time with Rabbi Simai. What's Rabbi Simai's logic? The Amarava Barhamduri Asabrali. He explained it to me the following way. Ves Zohar lo sishkav mishkave isha. And a man, you shall not sleep in the ways in which you sleep with a woman, plural. Mishkave is plural. Ezu Zohar sheyesh bo shnei mishkavos. What is the case of a man with whom you could have relations with in two ways? Havi Omer, I would tell you, ze androgynous. Rabbi said, there's only one case of where you can engage in a homosexual act in one of two ways, and that's androgynous. The Rabbanon would say, afal gav d'is beishnei mishkavos. The Rabbanon will say, yes, even though it says mishkave plural by homosexuality, es zohar ksiv, right? It nevertheless uses the lashon of the es zohar, which places of emphasis on the zichrus, which tells you that you can only violate mishkav zohar if, again, if lemaisa, it's a bishlo kedarka, only bishlo kedarka. So the Gemara says for Rabbanon, and the Rabbanon will say, Zohar greida minalu. Now we'll say, now go back for just a moment, leaving aside the androgynous. So remember, what's interesting, Rabbanon will say, is if you interpret the pasuk this way, Vezohar lo sishkav mishkave isha, one could understand there's a pasuk dafka dealing with what? With an androgynous. So how do I know about the stam iser of just stam homosexuality? So the Gemara says, if you take a look, the Bach changes this. So I don't know where, everybody probably has the Bach in a different place. In my Gemara, it's on the left-hand column. The Hagos HaBach, you see that little bays in the parentheses there? So that little bays, he says, Sham v'Rabbanon zachar grey d'minala. Here's how I have to read the Gemara. And how do the Rabbanon learn out the prohibition of just a stam zachar, stam mishkav zachar? May ve'es isha. So the extra S teaches you this prohibition. Shalokidarka minalu. And where do we know ultimately again the prohibition of Bia Shalokidarka in this context as well? So again, the Bach says again, Shalokidarka minalon, me isha. All right. Amrav Shizvi, Amrav Chista. Lo luchol Amrav Eliezer. Androgynous zachar ma'al yuhu. Now, Rabbi Eliezer did not say that an androgynous is considered to be a bona fide zachar in every single situation. How do I know that? Shem ato omer kein, because if you say that an androgynous is a bona fide zachar in every single case, b'mukdash in yikdash, then Rabosai, you should be able to offer up an androgynous animal as a karban. Because let's say for certain karbanos, you dafka need a zachar, so you should be able to offer up an androgynous karban. An androgynous carbon, because it's a zachar. So the Gemara says, but we know that you can't. Therefore, you see that androgynous is not reckoned as definitively male in every single situation. So how do you know that, by the way? How do you know that you can't offer up an androgynous animal as a carbon? The Tanna Rabbanan, because we learned, hanirva v'hamukta v'hanevad. So I'll say, if you have an animal that was nirva, that a human being engaged in an act of bestiality with it. Literally, nirva means raped. So it was violated. The animal was violated. Va'mukta. So mukta means an animal. An animal ultimately, again, was hukta, was set aside for avodah zarah. Ne'evad, it was actively worshipped as an idol, as idolatry. Vaha esnan, or an animal that was given to a harlot, right, to a prostitute as payment for her services, or an animal that was exchanged for a dog, vitumtum, or an animal that is a tumtum, va'androgynous, and an androgynous animal. So what's the halacha? Mitamin begadim abesabli. And I will say, actually, what the Brice is specifically referring to over here is a bird carbon. So remember, again, bird carbonos are dealt with very interestingly in the basement. They're not shechted. Instead, you do malika. The coin does malika with it. So if you go ahead and you use any one of these birds for this type of carbon, and then you go ahead and eat this bird, the halacha is that, again, the bird is an avela, because such a carbon is ineffective. And therefore, lemaisa, again, if you eat it, it gives tumah, it creates tumas begadim, it conveys tumah to your clothing, as the bird, as the food itself is still in your throat. So you see from here that what? The whole point of this is what? That although it sounds like we ruled decisively that androgynous is a zachar, we don't say androgynous is a zachar in every single case. There are situations where we still treat androgynous as a suffix. Rabbi Eliezer Maluzer says, Tumtum va androgynous ein mitamin begodim abes ablio. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees and he says, no, if the bird is a tumtum and an androgynous, therefore, again, it does not become an avela. It does not convey tumah to clothing when it's in your throat. Shai Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer says, komakum shenem arzachar nekeva, atamoti tumtum va'androgynous b'neihem. So Rabbi Eliezer says that whenever the Torah says that for a carbon, you have to bring a zachar and a keva, that comes to exclude a tumtum and androgynous from being offered. However, va'of, but by a bird offering, because the Torah does not state zachar in a keva, therefore, again, you need not exclude tumtum and androgynous from among them. So meaning, because the Torah does not say zachar in a keva by bird, therefore you can even use a tumtum or androgynous bird. But that's dafka by birds. By other karbanos, Rabbi Eliezer would agree you would not be able to go ahead and use an androgynous or a tumtum carbon. Aran Nachem by Yitzchak Af Anan Nami Tanina. We also learned Rabbi Eliezer and Reza says Tap of Peidalid Hakilayim Utrefa V'Yotzei Dofen V'Tumtum V'Androgynous Lo Kiddushin V'Lo Mekadshin. So we'll say so too. We also learned that Kilayim, any animal that is a result of grafting of two different species together, trefa is a trefa animal, yotzei dofen, trefa means, by the way, just trefa halachically means any condition from which an animal will die within 1 year. That's a trefa, sometimes less. Yotzei dofen, an animal that's born through a cesarean section, right? Not a naturally born animal, or tumtum, an androgynous animal, lo kiddushin. Ultimately, again, such animals cannot be sanctified. Rashi says, lo kiddushin betruma, betmura, we'll get to that. Lo kiddushin v'lo mekadshin, so makdishin, you can't go ahead and sanctify them, and again, they cannot be taken as karbanos. V'amar Shmuel, lo kiddushin betmura v'lo mekadshin ba'oset tmura. Shmuel says, no, what it means is, you can't sanctify them. Rabbi says, tmura means an exchange. So meaning, if you set aside one of these animals for a karban, and then you try to exchange it for another, so remember again, if I sanctify sheep A for a carbon, and then I decide, you know what, I want to give sheep B, so I'm going to swap A for B. So what's the halacha? V'hayahu usmura so kodesh. Both animals become sanctified. It's a penalty. However, again, let's say I sanctified one of these animals. I sanctified the androgynous animal as a carbon. And then I decide to swap it out. Right? Swap it out for another animal. So what's the halacha? Because the androgynous was never sanctified as a carbon, therefore there's no exchange for another carbon. Similarly, again, if I sanctified a regular animal and I want to exchange it for the androgynous animal, such a swap also is halachically ineffective because the mice of the androgynous can serve as a carbon. So whether you're swapping the androgynous for another or the androgynous is the swappy, if I don't know if that's right, is the animal being swapped for, then lemaisa again, it doesn't work. Meaning it's ineffective because the androgynous is not subject to the laws of consecration by carbonic animals. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Chayavin Alav Zachar Kiskilus. Chayavin Alav Skila Kizachar. Rabbi Eliezer says that the androgynous is male, and therefore if a man has relations with an androgynous, you are chayiv skila, you're chayiv literally death for a regular act of homosexuality. Tanya, Amar Rebbe, kishalachti l'motora itzel Rabbi Elazar ben Shamoa, when I went to learn Torah, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamoa, chavru alav talmidav ketarnegolim shal beis bukya. his Tamidim, the Tamid of Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, ganged up on me like the roosters of Beis Bukya. Everybody knows about those roosters. Look at Rashi. Shal Beis Bukya, Bikiyim v'charifim v'imanichim tarnagol narchim. So we'll say, the roosters of Beis Bukya were notorious that they did not allow foreign roosters, right, within their coop. They would beat up the foreign roosters. So apparently, again, the Talmidim of Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua were very, very protective of their Rebbe and very selective about who they came, because they didn't want any nudniks. You know, they didn't want anybody coming in who was going to go in and start bothering their Rebbe. So they were very careful about who came into the yeshiva. So Rebbe says over here that I went to the yeshiva, Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, to learn from him. And boy, his Talmidim gave me a hard time. And they gave me such a hard time, I was only able to learn one thing. What's the one thing I was able to learn? B'mishnasenu, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, androgynous chayavin alav skila kizachar. So they gave me such a hard time. The only thing I was able to pick up in the yeshiva is that Rabbi Eliezer holds that an androgynous is considered to be like a male, and therefore, again, you are chayav for relations with him skila as a regular act of mishkav zachar of homosexuality. Hadron alach ha'aram. Shkayach, I will say. Tomorrow morning, Shabbos, Emir Tashem, 7:45.